Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I am Tim, and the topic of our podcast today is the very talented singer Sam Cooke. We're going to talk about Sam's career and his untimely death. He died at a very young age. We're going to get into all that in just a few moments, but before we do, let me introduce my co-host for today's podcast, the man who is very familiar with the music scene, a man of very many talents, a man who is, well, a person who is probably the most dangerous man in podcasting today, and that's the Honorable Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
Well, thank you for that kind introduction, Timmy. I'm doing very, very well.
Well, you know, I can do a proper introduction when I'm not distracted by our other panelist.
But have you ever noticed that every time you try to say something nice about me, she's got to interrupt, cough,
yeah, or sigh,
roll eyes.
Yeah. It doesn't always come across on the our listeners can always tell it, but she's out there, you know, making faces. You know, putting a finger down her throat.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, Brandy's not
showing
here
today. Her breasts. Sometimes she lifts her shirt.
Sometimes. Yeah. You know, she's got a lot of beeps.
Mm-hmm.
But Brandy's not with us today. So, when Brandy's not with us, we try to do, like, high-level intellectual type
high
of
talk. Highbrow stuff.
Yeah,
we can
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
We don't have to do the gruesomeness because... You know, yeah. Brandy...
She thrives on slaughter and murder and, you know, all those terrible things.
I think she gets a peculiar sexual excitement out
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I've noticed her heavy breathing when we get
yeah.
when we talk about some of these gory details.
When we did Carl Pan's Ram...
Oh, yeah, she was off the wall.
She was off... She was crazy.
I know, I thought that...
I thought somebody had slipped a girl a Spanish fly, Timmy.
She just seemed to get off. She got off excited on Egging, too.
Oh, she Albert Fish.
Yeah. Oh, Albert Fish. Yeah. Well, I don't want to. I couldn't tell from my vantage point, but she looked to be doing something over there. I don't know what it was during Albert Fish.
That's where we got all the. Remember the mic was there was always that.
Yeah. Thing. Yeah.
I was like, what the hell are you doing over there?
Yeah, girl? I'm not sure what she was doing, but Brandy will be joining us again next week. She's on vacation this week and probably smoking dope or probably laying in a opium den somewhere.
I think she's gone to Evil Spawn Con.
Devil
Spawn.
Yeah, probably.
Whatever.
Yeah. So she's, but you know, whatever she's at, I'm sure she's worshiping Satan. So, Brandy, I hope you're having a good time on your vacation.
We haven't had young Brittany here forever. Hopefully, we get that girl back. But
yeah, I'd like to. She was a voice of reason, young Brittany.
She was. She was a smart girl.
She was alcoholic.
Well, she was an alcoholic. She had questionable moral character.
Yeah. I don't think there was any question about that.
No, there was not much question. I mean, you put 3 beers in the girl, and she's dancing around with one shoe on.
Yeah, but we do miss young Brittany. We hope she comes back and at least from time to time to do a podcast with us. Colonel, do you have any shout-outs before we get into Sam Cooke?
I got my standard 3.
Okay.
I got my... My Lady Beverly.
Mm-hmm. Lady Beverly. I miss Lady Beverly's updates on British history. So I know she's been busy, but Lady Everly, if you get some time, we loved your British history updates on the History Tweet page.
I would give Rutabaga a shout out, but he said he will no longer listen to this podcast until he is a proper presentation is done on him.
Well, we might have some time to talk about Mount Rudy later on.
Maybe you got the pointy end of my wife last night to me.
Well, you know,
he was criticizing her baby.
I was not criticizing Rudy. I just wasn't going to do a podcast on him. Now, if she wants to talk to someone about someone criticizing Rudy, you need to talk to the devil.
Well, yeah, she's looking for the devil right now.
Because Brandy hostile to Rudy. I'm just neutral.
She's just outside. Yeah, she. But the wife is getting a cross, a crucifix, and some garlic, and she's going to come after the devil.
Yeah, she's, you know, because Brandy's been casting spells on Rudy. If you ever have to get an exorcism or whatever, it's because of Brandy. So.
Well, and, you know, the good thing, Brandy is, I mean, she's a vessel of evil.
Yeah.
But if there's one good thing about this whole thing is she's lazy.
Yeah,
she
that's
lazy,
true.
Timmy.
Yeah, that's true.
So she ain't, you know, she might
she's say, not motivated.
Nah, she'd say I'll cast a spell.
She's
on
not
her.
A very motivated evil spirit.
Yeah, she's just lazy.
A lazy evil spirit.
She'd rather sit around, play Xbox, smoke cigarettes, and drink beer.
Yeah, she does that well. Mm-hmm. You know, she should focus on things you excel at. Now, but if you see Rudy's head starting to turn around and he starts vomiting and things. You
yeah, know, it's the devil.
Yeah, it's Brandy.
And I got, of course, Dottie Scott, who...
Yeah, she gave me hell about Rudy, too. She saw his picture. Why don't you like Rudy? It's not that I don't like Rudy. I'm just not going to do a podcast on Rudy.
Well, and you know, and just to clarify something for the listeners, I got a lot of grief about that raccoon picture you put up there.
You know, it's like Donald Trump and Ted Cruz. If you hit me, I'm going to hit you back harder.
I got a lot of grief about the raccoon picture, and I'm going to say this. The raccoon was on my porch. He was at my front door, and I told him, please leave, Mr. Raccoon. And he damn near attacked me and tried to shoo me off the porch. Then I left. Mm-hmm. And said, I'm coming back in 5 minutes with a baseball bat. And I get off my damn porch. I came back, and the son of a bitch showed me his teeth and swung his paws at me. And they got those little fingers like people.
Yeah. Well, you shouldn't have threatened him, because then he fell. He broke his hip. Now he has had a hip replacement. Now he had some liver damage. Now he's on the donor list. I think he's 192 last time I looked.
Last time I heard he had a staph infection. He got the MRSA.
Yeah, so, you know, all of that as a result of your, you know, threat.
Don't threaten a colonel.
So anyway, let's, okay.
You got a bunch of shout-outs.
I do. I want to shout out the folks who are on our History Dweebs, the podcast page. We have two History Dweebs Facebook pages. We have the History Dweebs page, the general page, where we, you know, we put today and this date in history and that sort of thing. And then we have the Facebook page is dedicated just to the folks who listen to the podcast, and that's the History Dreams podcast page, and that's a group, and we encourage you to join it, and it's growing, and it's a lot of cool people there, but I want to give some shout-outs, and I'm probably going to miss someone, and if I do, I'm sorry. I just want to run through some shout-outs real quick, because it's really fun having these folks on board and getting, you know, learning about them, and they're a real fun group. So I'm going to run down these very quickly. We want to thank for listening Stephanie Q, Elise, who we're doing this podcast for. She demanded.
Elise, you demanded Sam Cook, you get Sam Cook.
Yeah, because, you know.
I'm wondering, does Elise have some dirt on you or something?
No, she's just a very.
She blackmailing you?
She's a very nice lady, and she demanded it. So I kind of respond to women who are very demanding.
Okay, oh, yeah.
Katja. Over in Denmark, the lovely Katja. Thank you for listening. We have Francis, Trixie, who's a lot of fun. She's from...
Trixie, I'm pretty sure might be crazy.
I think she's a communist, but I kind of like that.
That's like the communist part, but I think she's crazy.
Yeah, but she seems like a lot of fun. Tasha, who is studied 6th century European...
Yes, she did. She's a very...
history. So she's a historian. Historian besides, you know, not... But like us, of course.
It's amazing. You look at some people, and you can tell by looking at her, she's just a bright girl.
Yeah. She's a very bright girl. So, Tasha, thank you for listening. Chris and, of course, Brittany.
Did you know they're a couple?
Yes.
Yeah.
A fine couple. So thank you both for listening. Allie, of course, you know, the,
now that's one crazy ass woman.
Yeah,
right,
she is a, you know, she is a potential serial killer. And we'll be doing her podcast on her one day, I'm sure.
I'm sure we will.
Yeah.
If she don't get us first.
Yeah, yeah. Let's hope that we... Yeah, she said she's coming to the U.S., so... and, you know, we hope we get to see her, but, you know, without weapons. Kim Taylor, of course, your good friend Kim Taylor.
You know, and, you know, Kim, I'll tell you something interesting about her. Not interesting so much, but she's a mean girl.
What do you mean she's mean?
Just a mean, mean girl to me. Well, occasionally, and you know, interacting with people, and it seems like it's mostly women that follow us for some reason. I will get, you know, personal messages in my inbox, people mostly asking for life advice, life coaching.
Oh, really? Do you get a lot of that?
Yeah, I get a lot of that.
You do.
Someone
has to be really screwed up if they come to you for life advice.
And so Kim had sent me something, and I said, well, if you want my advice, and she responded back, if I wanted your advice, I would have asked for your damn advice. Now, shut up, stupid. And so, I mean,
sounds like a pretty bright lady.
Well, you know, did you see the picture she posted on her page? She looks like such a sweet, pleasant girl.
Well, she is sweet. She doesn't want your damn $0.02.
If I wanted your damn advice, I'd ask you for your advice.
We have some very strong-willed ladies in our
page. We certainly do. So, Kim, take your...
So you were trying to be like this father figure.
I'm trying to guide her, and she's like, if I wanted your damn advice, I'd ask for it. Now, shut up. But, so, Kim, get you a massage or something. I don't know. She may have had the PMS. I don't know.
Now, she's really into history, too. So she posted some cool stuff on the page. She's a big fan of history. Marvin, Down Under.
Yeah, down on
Marvin, watch out for Allie. he says he listens to us when he takes walks on the beach. So, you know, you can listen to us, but, you know, kind of always keep an eye over your shoulder.
Well, and, you know, the shame
for the axe-willing Allie.
You want to say, hey, you know, Marvin, we got another Aussie listener down there, Allie. Mm-hmm. You guys should, you know, meet. I don't know what their marital situation is.
No, Marvin's married.
Oh, okay.
Marvin is married, yeah.
But, you know, it's like you kind of would like to say, hey, you know, hook somebody up with Allie. I don't think she's married, because she's a pretty girl,
Allie.
But, you know, she's going to kill somebody.
Yeah, she's going to kill somebody at some point. And then we'll do a podcast on her. M from Nottingham, England, over there with Robin Hood. Erica.
Erica crazy, too.
Yeah, she's a nice lady. And Brandy McKenzie. Jessica. Nikki P. Tara, who just recently joined our podcast page, Amy Carroll, Mary Ray, Annette, Alicia, and John C. So I'm sure I'm leaving someone out. If I am, I'm really sorry. Barry and Barry, my friends from Portsmouth, they're on the page and they're active.
Barry's
as well.
An interesting guy. And we talked about Brittany and Tim being a couple. And Brittany, I occasionally will interact with her. While Tim likes to watch soccer on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And, Brittany, we're going to give you a chance to come clean before the devil spills the dirt on you, or before the colonel spills the dirt
on you. You have dirt on Brittany?
Even I got
Chris,
dirt on
her
Brittany.
Her Chris.
No, got dirt. Chris knows the dirt on Brittany.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to give you a chance to come clean on the page before you,
What? I know, you got me curious. This is like a Donald Trump type of threat to Ted Cruz.
It is. I'm leaving it out there mysteriously.
Okay, so you're just throwing bombs, basically.
I'm throwing bombs, see where they land, and seeing if...
You know who we forgot? Celine.
Oh, you know what? Celine just gotten damn mean. She's just a mean woman.
Mean Celine.
I answered her on a post, got her name wrong. Now, who in the hell? First of all, you the ones don't learn how to spell your name right. You learn how to spell your damn name right. It's got an I at the end, Celine.
So you think her name is spelled wrong?
Well,
you think she spells her own name wrong?
She spelled her own name wrong, and then she got all nasty with me. It's like me saying, spelling my name, C-H-A-W-L-E-S, right. Charles.
Right, so.
And then saying, you spelled my name wrong. No, you, my wife. My wife's right. A good example. The male version of Renee is R-E-N-E.
Right.
And the female is R-E-N-E-E.
Right.
But, you know, Renee's mom being just half ignorant. No, three quarters ignorant.
That's not nice.
Didn't know how to spell, so she spelled her name R-E-N-E. And Renee will say the same thing. I wish people would learn how to spell my name. No, you learn how to spell your damn name. Tell your mama to learn how to spell your damn name.
We forgot Charlie and Jennifer and Jessica. I think I said Jessica. So those are a couple that we forgot as well. So if I forgot, what, I'm sorry.
It's Charlie just has a little bit of a blog. And
Roger is an interesting guy, too. He's on our, he's active on our podcast
page.
Yeah. So.
But I'll tell you, Charlie's an amazing writer. Amazing writer.
Yeah, and her podcast is really good. Scott, of course, he has his own podcast, the Bastards of the Universe, and in Scotty J's history.
Scott's still
history
drinking.
Podcast. No, he's not drinking. He just came down. He did. He came down and visited all over Ohio.
I know. We did get to see him.
I know, but he went to all, like, he went to Grant's, President Grant's birthplace, and then he went to the tomb of James Garfield. I mean, he was all over Ohio. So he just, I think he's just kind of getting over that trip. But anyway, let's get started talking about Sam Cooke, who I know you're a big music fan, Colonel.
I'm a big music fan. Sam Cooke was one of the, Sam Cooke was a guy that every white guy aspired to have a voice like Sam
Cooke. Yeah, his voice was very smooth. Mm-hmm. Of course, he's most remembered for hits like You Send Me. Probably his famous, most famous one, you say, You Send Me?
I'd say Another Saturday Night.
Okay, Another Saturday Night was another one of his hits. Mm-hmm. Twisting the Night Away, Cupid, you know, Cupid, yeah. Draw Back Your Bow. Samuel Cooke was born in Clarksdale, Mississippi on January 22nd, 1931, which, of course, you know what that means.
Pregnant during the holidays.
His mother definitely was pregnant during the holidays. He was the fifth of eight children born to his father, who was a minister, Reverend Charles Cooke, and his wife, Annie Mae. The family moved into Chicago when Sam Cooke was just 2 years old in 1933. So kind of like at the height of the Depression, they moved to Chicago. He attended elementary school there, Doolittle Elementary, and then the Wendell Phillips Academy High School in Chicago. And that's the same school that Nat King Cole had attended just a few years prior.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. He started, Sam started to sing professionally. Well, he started to sing in church at a very young age. Of course, you know, being the son of a minister, he attended church a lot. And he started to sing professionally in a group at the age of six called the Singing Children. So he got an early start. He, and of course.
Now, do you think that he was the one that Dusty Springfield was singing about? The only one that could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man?
I don't know. Maybe. Maybe. I like that song. He was 6 years old when he started singing professionally with a group called the Singing Children. They sang gospel songs. In his teen, he formed his own group called the Highway QCs. I'm not sure what the QCs stood for, but they modeled their, you know, their style after the most popular gospel group in the country at the time called the Soul Stirrers. They were, you know, they were like the number one gospel group. So they kind of modeled their style after this group because this group was well-known and very popular at the time. So he became the lead singer in his teens of the Highway QCs. And during that time, he befriended a fellow gospel singer and a neighbor of his named, you know?
I do not know, Timmy.
Lou Rawls.
No kidding.
Yeah. He said Lou Rawls sang in a...
Lou was small, too.
Yeah, he was smooth. He sang in a rival gospel group at the time. All these guys started in gospel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even guys like B.B. King. I mean, they all started singing what they call spirituals. And then they moved on to rock and roll or blues or what, you know, what have you. In 1950, when Sam Cooke was 19 years old, he replaced the gospel tenor, R.H. Harris, as the lead singer for the gospel group, the Soul Stirrers. So he got, you know, not only did he catch a break, but he got into the group that, you know, he was, you know, that he admired the most. So he got, and this group had a record with Specialty Records. So it was a big deal. I mean, this was a big gospel group at the time. And they toured on what was known as the Gospel Highway, which were just a small towns, churches, and events all over the country. And they toured almost year-round. And in the summer, they would tour up north. And then, you know, in the wintertime, they would tour down south. And Sam not only sang, but he also started writing songs. He was a prolific songwriter. He started to bring gospel to the attention of, because Sam was such a, you know, he was 19 at the time, they started drawing younger crowds, including a lot of young girls who would come to see the Soulstirrers play or sing, because, you know, to get a glimpse at Sam Cooke, because he was a handsome young guy. And so he was kind of a heartthrob of the Gospel Highway at the time. But despite his success, I mean, he was at top of the world in terms of gospel music. He wanted more. He wanted to do crossover music. Now, at the time, that was really frowned upon, you know, especially for him coming from a family where his father was a minister. Singing popular music was frowned upon in the gospel circles. He's like, either you sing gospel or, you know, you were wasting God's talent, right? Uh-huh. If you were singing the devil's music, right? And so those who had talent, such as Sam, was expected to use that talent to praise God. But Sam grew tired of life on the road in the gospel circuit, and he really wanted a new breakout as a crossover artist. But he was scared to do so because he was afraid that he would fail, and if he did, he wouldn't be accepted back with the gospel crowd, right? So he recorded a song in 1956 entitled "Lovable Boy." It was his first big hit, and it was a remake of a gospel song called "Wonderful." It was released under the alias Dale Cooke in order so he wouldn't, you know, kind of alienate his gospel fan base.
Mm-hmm.
But it really didn't fool anyone because his voice was so unique, and his you know, had distinctive vocals, so it was easy for people to recognize. Now, the head of Specialty Records, who had the label, you know, with the label in which the Soulstirrers were on, became, you know, upset at first, but finally gave Sam his blessing for him to do what they call secular music. But, you know, he was disappointed in Sam for not sticking with the gospel. And he thought he would be doing secular music in the lines of Little Richard, who crossed over a little bit before then. But, you know, Sam loved all type of music. So when this head of Specialty Records, Rupe, walked in on a recording session, he heard Sam covering a Gershwin song. He got really upset, and there was an argument between the two, what eventually happened, Sam left the label, and he left the gospel highway behind and moved on full-time into a contract with RCA Records in 1960. And he would go on to start his own publishing company later on. And Sam was a smart businessman. I mean, you know, he's a young guy, right? He's 20 years old. But he got ownership of his master recordings. He made a contract that he'd get ownership of his master recordings after 30 years.
Yeah, and that was a big, big deal back then.
Oh, it sure was. Now, you know, of course, Sam did not live long enough to reap the benefits of it. But a lot of artists back in those days got screwed by their manager or by the record company, who would tie them into these contracts. And basically, they would, you know, they would write the music and whatever. And they have absolutely no rights
to
them.
No control to them.
Yeah. So Sam would not go for that. He was a tough negotiator, and he made sure that he would get the rights, at least eventually. It was, a remarkable feat for any recording artist at the time. I mean, even guys like Frank Sinatra and them, they would have a hard time getting that deal. In 1957, Cooke appeared on his first time on TV on a Guy Mitchell show. That was shortly then he released You Send Me, which, of course, is, like we said, probably one of his most signature hits. It spent 6 weeks at number one on the Billboard R&B charts. The song also had a crossover mainstream success, spending 3 weeks at number one on the Billboard pop charts. In 1961, Sam started his own record label. Again, he's a young guy here. You know, he's in his early 20s. Started his own record label with called SAR Records. The label soon started signing stars like the Sim Twins, the Valentinos, Bobby Womack and his brothers, Johnny Taylor. I mean, they had some hits. Now, one of his first hits, Chain Gang, reached number two on the Billboard charts in the early 60s. It was followed by Sad Mood, Cupid, which we talked about, Bring It Home, with Lou Rawls doing backup vocals.
Yeah.
Another Saturday Night, and Twistin' the Night Away. In all, he had Sam Cooke, in his short lifetime, had 29 top 40 hits. I mean, that was a lot. I mean, he was just prolific songwriter and recorder.
And the interesting thing about that, being so prolific, is you have few singer-songwriters in that time.
Sure.
I mean, that were putting out top 40 hits.
Right.
You know, you had the like Tin Pan Alley type situations, mm-hmm. where you had your performers and you had your songwriters.
Right. And then, you'd have people like, you know, I guess a little before that, Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
But they were rare. They were rare,
and they were not nearly as prolific as him.
Yeah, he was just, I mean, he was writing all the time, performing all the time. In spite of releasing mostly singles, he released a well-received blues album in 1963 called Nightbeat, and it became one of his most critically acclaimed albums. Ain't That the Good News was the name of the album, and it featured five singles in 1964. In 1963, he signed with King Records, so he's back under another label, and negotiated a five-year deal with RCA, which was one of their holding companies, he got exclusive distribution rights to his music and 6% royalty payments for the recording session. So he was a smart businessman, as we said. For tax reasons, he got some of it. He made it so it would be deferred over 2 years. So he ended up making, like, for that signing, like $175,000. So at age of 33, Sam Cooke was on top of the music world.
Well, now, something happened. That all changed in December of
1964. Yeah, so now he's at the point that he's 33.
He's 33.
He's at the pinnacle of his career.
Yeah.
You know, he's a star, and he's already made a lot of money.
Yeah.
He's already had a lot of hits.
He's in control of everything, which is rare for you know, a person in his position.
Well, and let's face it, a person of his, you know, of his race too.
Well, true.
I mean, he had not only the talent and not only the fame, the fortune, everything, the success, but he also was in control of his own career.
Well, back in those days, it was just notorious for record companies and managers and promoters and whatnot to just rip off the artist.
Yeah.
But this was especially true when it came to the black artists.
Yeah,
Because they had less recourse than even white artists had.
Exactly. They would get tied into very... they would get ripped off, basically.
Yeah.
They would get totally ripped off.
And Sam Cooke had put himself in a position where that could not happen to him. Mm-hmm. He was basically... I don't know if there's a comparison to be made... for that time, I mean, he was really a pioneer in that. Really, I guess the only comparison to be made is the Beatles.
Yeah,
you know, who controlled their own destiny.
Sure.
So he's in that position.
Everything's good.
Everything's great, and then all of a sudden, as things happen in this world, something takes a bizarre turn.
Okay.
And on the early hours of December 11th, 1964. Sam Cooke had been out that night drinking a lot at a Los Angeles bar where he met a woman named Eliza Boyer.
Okay.
Now, the pair hit it off and eventually ended up at the Hacienda Motel.
Okay, so this was probably out. They were probably out drinking. He picks this girl up, meets this girl. They go to a hotel.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's only two people involved, so nobody knows. But they had some type of altercation in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And Cook ended up in the motel's office, where he has this big clash with the motel manager. Okay. Mm-hmm. And there's the motel's manager is Bertha Franklin.
Yeah, she's an I looked at these the photos of the the woman he was with. I think she was a young she appeared to be a young Asian American.
Yeah.
And then Bertha was an older African American lady.
Mm-hmm. So Cook comes storming in and the motel manager Bertha Franklin shot Sam Cook.
And killed him. At the age of 33.
He died from an injury. The manager claimed it was inflicted in self-defense and was later, they ruled it a justifiable homicide, Timmy.
And there was some strange stuff with this murder.
Yeah, there was. The police had separate reports of at this hotel of a shooting and a kidnapping.
Mm-hmm.
And police found Cook's body clad only in a sports jacket and shoes, but no shirt, pants, or underwear.
Well, that sounds like your Saturday night, Colonel.
Well, it does. It does sound like another Saturday night, like a Sam Cooke song, Colonel.
Right.
Another Saturday night, but,
yeah, with no,
but the man's got
no pants.
Only one shoe, a sports jacket, no drawers, no pants, no underwear.
Yeah.
He'd gotten a gunshot wound to the chest, which pierced his heart. Now, the motel manager, Bertha Franklin, said she had shot Cook in self-defense after he broke into the office residence and attacked her. Her account was immediately questioned and disputed by friends and acquaintances of Sam Cook.
Yeah, because it wasn't his nature.
No, it was not in his nature. Now, the official police record states that Franklin fatally shot Cook, who had checked in earlier that evening. Now, Franklin claims that Cook had broken into the manager's office in a rage, wearing nothing but a shoe and a sports coat, demanding to know the whereabouts of a woman who had accompanied him to the hotel.
Right. So what? Something happened in the hotel.
Yeah, something happened.
Yeah.
Now, Franklin said that the woman was not in the office, and she told Cook this, but Cook was enraged. He didn't believe her, and he violently grabbed her, demanding to know the woman's whereabouts. Now, according to Bertha Franklin, there's only two people here, so we got one side of the story.
And one of them's dead.
Right. So she wrestled with Cook. The two of them fell to the floor. She got up and ran and retrieved a gun. Cook followed her, and she turned and fired a shot at Cook in self-defense, and it hit him in the torso. And his last words were, "Lady, you shot me."
That's appropriate, I guess.
Yeah, but here's where it gets interesting.
Okay.
Rather than he fell mortally wounded to the floor. But rather than shoot him again, she grabbed a broom and beat him over the head with a broomstick.
Oh, that's just mean spirited. That's just mean spirited.
I mean, the man's laying there on the floor bleeding, and you're beating him with a broomstick.
Yeah.
That sounds like something the devil do.
Yeah, she would.
I mean,
she would.
Add insult to injury. What? I don't know.
Why don't you get a shaker of salt and pour it in
there? Yeah, just pour it in there.
Yeah.
Or tell your dog to come in and piss on him or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Now, the motel's owner, Evelyn Carr, claimed that she had been on the telephone with Franklin at the time of this incident. So there was some corroboration there.
Mm-hmm.
Carr claimed that she had overheard Cook break
into
the room.
She was a near witness.
She was a near witness, that's right. So they had a coroner's inquest. Now, the woman who had accompanied that Cook to the hotel was identified as Eliza Boyer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she had also called the police that night shortly before Carhead, Bertha Carr, the manager. Boyer claimed had called from a telephone booth near the motel telling them she had just escaped being kidnapped. So what she's saying is Sam Cook kidnapped her and she just escaped this hotel. So she claimed that she was out with Cook after they left a local nightclub together. She repeatedly requested that he take her home, but instead took her against her will to the Hacienda Motel. She claimed that once in one of the motel's rooms, Cook physically forced her onto the bed and that she was certain he was going to rape her. And this is where it gets a little cloudy. Now think about, I mean, just follow it through logically.
Okay.
According to her, when Sam Cook stepped into, now he's got a pin to the bed, right?
Right. And let's step back. This is someone he met in a bar.
He met at a bar.
He brings her to a cheap motel.
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you see the pictures of the hotel.
Yeah, it's a shady-ass hotel.
It's a shady hotel, right. Even, you know.
Even by the devil's standards.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was, a low budget type hotel. But go ahead.
So what she's saying here is Sam Cook got on the bed.
Mm-hmm.
He's forced her on the bed. She's certain she's going to get raped. But then he gets up and for some reason goes to the bathroom.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now, we know he's naked.
Right. Well, you got a sports coat on.
Well, he put his sports coat on a little bit after that.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Okay, I see.
So she's sure she's going to get raped, but then he gets up and goes to the bathroom, and she escapes. Okay?
Yeah.
So and this is her story. This is what she said. Now, according to her, when he went into the bathroom, she quickly grabbed her clothes and ran from the room. Now, she said in her haste, she had also scooped up most of Cook's clothing by mistake. And this is another one. You have to be careful. You know, rape is a terrible thing.
No means no. Exactly.
Well, no means, most of the time, no means no. Sometimes, right.
It means smack me harder. Is that what you're saying?
It does. But
you're running a risk when you do that.
You do. But I mean, okay, what she's saying is he's forcing himself on her.
Mm.
And I guess the clothes could have all ended up in one pile, but that seems, there's a lot of unanswered questions here.
And, right. And that's one theory, is that he was going to, or maybe she got there, she meant to go there with him voluntarily.
And decided to get out, or maybe he started acting crazy or something.
Maybe. And then she decided, I got to get away from this guy. And, maybe she said, I'm going to grab his clothes on purpose so he can't chase me. I mean,
there's a few different speculations here.
Mm-hmm.
And one is that she, they had sex,
mm-hmm.
And she robbed him.
Mm-hmm.
And then took off with his clothes.
Or they didn't have sex and she
robbed him.
Right.
A lot of different things could have happened there. Or she might be telling the truth.
Now, let's say if you're Sam Cook, you're getting physical with this young lady in the bed, and then you get up and you go to the restroom, and then you walk out, and your clothes are all gone,
mm-hmm.
probably your wallet, and.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to run out. Where is this woman?
Mm-hmm.
And your first place you're going to check is she down at this manager's office? Now, granted, it wasn't a smart thing to do.
Yeah, no.
But you could see.
Running around with just a sport jacket on with the tallywhacker flapping in the wind.
Yeah, you probably want to put a towel on or something. But you could see maybe he was in a rush to try to, maybe she was ripping him off and he was trying to find her. Or her story is correct. He was going to rape her, and she just grabbed up at her clothes, ended up grabbing his, or grabbed his on purpose so he couldn't follow her.
Yeah.
And hightailed it out of there, got to a phone booth and called the police.
But something put him into a rage.
Right.
And that, you know, that got him shot. Mm-hmm. And that's what's kind of interesting about this whole thing, that a lot of things just don't add up. Mm-hmm. But she claimed that she had scooped up. Now, she said she first ran to the manager's office, beat on the door, but the manager didn't answer. So she took off, fearing Cook would soon be coming after her. She fled from the motel before the manager ever got there. Then she put her clothing on. So she's got her clothes on. She hid Sam Cook's clothing, went to a telephone booth, and called the police. Now, here's where it gets weird again. If she's robbing him, why is she calling the police?
I don't think you call the police if you're robbing him.
Right.
You know.
So what has sent him into a rage? You know, that's one of those questions that's never going to get answered.
But now, you know, you may get into this, so there's another theory, but let me know when you...
Well, Boyer's story is only an account of what happened, so... and it's long been called into questions. Inconsistencies between her version of events and details reported by other eyewitnesses or other witnesses, as well as circumstantial evidence, suggest she may have gone willingly to the motel with Cook, then slipped out of the room in order to rob him rather than to escape. But
maybe to rob him, maybe she had second thoughts. But like you said, if she's going to rob him, why is she calling the police?
Why is she calling the police?
It seems to me that you know, if you're going to rob some, and I travel a lot, and you remember, like, it's funny what you do when someone rips you off.
Mm-hmm.
A couple years ago, I was in Thailand, and I had just landed. I mean, literally just got to the hotel. And normally I have two wallets when I travel, one that I'll just put a little bit of money in, and the other one I'll keep in the hotel with all my credit cards and, you know, cash, most of my cash, ID and stuff like that. Mm. But I had just landed, so I decided I'm going to walk to McDonald's, right, which was like a block and a half away. It was like 12:30 at night. And so I'm walking to McDonald's. I thought I'd go there, get something to eat. I was starving. It was a 27-hour flight, whatever. So I'm jet-lagged. I'm tired. It's late. And I'm walking down the street, and a little street urchin come up to me, a street walker, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, hey, you want a date, that type of thing. And she's like, you know, tapping on my leg. And so I had shorts on. And I was like, you know, no, I'm going to go meet my wife. Just saying anything to get rid of her. So, very brief encounter. I turned the corner to go where McDonald's was. And then something just came to my mind. I better check my wallet. And I'd be damned, it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my first reaction, what was it? I'm running back.
Running back where the whore is.
Where she was at. Now, there's thousands of people on the street.
And they all look alike. Well, you can't tell them apart.
Well, I mean, but there's thousands of people. There's, you know, train stations. I mean, you know, there's traffic and tuk-tuks and just everything. And, you know, and if I find her, what am I going to say to her? You know what I mean? It's like,
give me my damn money back.
Right. Well, of course, she was long gone. And,
sure.
And, you know, I had to get all my credit cards back. Had to get, you know, they had to wire me money. I mean, it was just a mess. But, yeah, it's funny. Your reaction is, I got to get that back. I'm going to get. And if I went and confronted her, who knows? You know, she may have kicked my ass, or she may have had someone there.
And somebody stabbed
you. Yeah. It's just, you know, I think it's a human reaction to when, you know, you run into something where you get ripped off, is that, you know, to go back and try to get your money back.
Whatever.
It's not going to happen.
There were certain things on here that did kind of... Now, her role was always questioned in this, but...
Well, there is a theory.
And there's another theory to this, but she was... Now, Sam was deeply inebriated at the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when the inquest came... The jurors, they said, okay, his bizarre behavior was related to him being so drunk.
Yeah, he was erratic.
And state of dress.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in addition to this, cause testimony corroborated Franklin's version of events, you know, the motel owner and the motel manager. And because both her and Franklin, they both passed lie detector tests, the coroner's jury ultimately accepted Franklin's explanation and returned it as a justifiable homicide.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that verdict, authorities officially closed the case on Sam's death, okay? Mm-hmm. But some of his families and supporters, they rejected this whole version of events, as well as those given by Franklin and Carr. They believe... Mm-hmm. Now, remember how successful he was.
Right. And we had talked about how he was unique in that he was
unique, and he'd set up all these companies. He owned...
And he had rights to his own material, which was rare at the time. And what we probably... You know, we talked a little bit about it, Colonel, about the artists that were ripped off. And, they didn't own their own rights to their own music.
So he owned all the rights.
He did own all his rights. But for the ones who were ripped off, the ones who were taken advantage of, a lot of times the recording companies and the managers, they had mob connections.
Yeah. And so there was nothing you could do.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the theories here, is that this was a mob hit.
Well, one of the theories is that because Etta James, the singer, saw Sam Cooke's body before his funeral, and she said that the injury she saw went well beyond what was on the official reports. Mm-hmm. She said Cook was beaten so badly that his head was damn near separated from his shoulders, his hands were broken and crushed, and his nose was mangled.
Which goes back to your theory, why do you beat someone up over the head with a broomstick after you shot him?
Exactly. Now, some people believe that Cook's manager, Alan Klein, may have had a role in his death. Klein owned Tracy Limited, mm-hmm. which ultimately owned all the rights to Cook's recordings. Mm-hmm. So with Cook out of the way, those things come straight to him. He had the most, when you look at who's got, you know,
the most to gain.
He had an awful lot to gain. Mm-hmm. But, you know, those are all speculations. Nobody really knows. He had thousands of people came to mourn him. Mm-hmm. Ray Charles, Lou Rawls, they both sang at the funeral in Los Angeles.
You mentioned Etta James.
Etta James. There was another service held in his hometown in Chicago. And now, the year after his death, Cook's record company released the song A Change Is Gonna Come. And remember, he was an excellent songwriter, and mm-hmm. he wrote this civil rights anthem in response to Bob Dylan's "Blowing in the Wind," mm-hmm. and it was his most political song, the most political song he'd ever written.
Yeah, this is at the height of the civil rights movement, Dr. King's march on Washington.
Yeah, and sadly. Now, Sam had been married twice. His first was to a singer and dancer. He lived kind of he had some tragedy in his life. He was married to a singer-dancer, Dolores Cook. She was killed in an auto accident in 1959. And they had just gotten divorced at that time, and although they were divorced, Sam paid for all the expenses of his ex-wife's funeral.
Yeah.
Now, him and his second wife, Barbara, had three children, Linda, Tracy, and Vincent. And Vincent, the year before Sam died, was 2 years old, drowned in a family swimming pool.
Yeah, so he had a lot of tragedy in his short 33 years. A lot of success, but a lot of...
Yeah. He also fathered a couple other children out mm-hmm. of wedlock, Denise Somerville and Keith Bowling. Now, the motel manager, Bertha Franklin, says she had received numerous death threats after shooting Mr. Sam Cooke.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I mean, you know, it's...
And beating him with a broomstick. She left a position at the Hacienda Motel and did not disclose where she had moved.
And she went to the... what's the place that leaves a line on for you?
Motel 6?
Motel 6.
Yeah. She went to the Motel 6.
Yeah.
After being cleared by a coroner's jury, she sued Cook's estate.
Oh, man, that's fucking
cold.
Yeah,
she cited physical injuries and mental anguish suffered as a result of Cook's attack.
That's bullshit. That's like a guy suing the congresswoman that he shot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She sought $200,000 in damages. Now, Barbara Womack, she was a lawyer for the estate. She countersued on behalf of the estate and just asked for $7,000 to cover the funeral expenses. Mm-hmm. Alyssa Boyer provided testimony to support Franklin in the case. In 1967, a jury ruled in favor of Franklin on both counts, awarding her $30,000 in damages. Now, 1986, jump forward, Cook was inducted as a charter member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. 1987, he was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. 1999, Cook was honored with the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award, and in 2004, Rolling Stone ranked him on 16th on the list of 100 greatest artists of all time.
Wow.
And in 2008, Cook was named the fourth greatest singer of all time by Rolling Stone. And to tell you who, ironically, was ahead of him, you had Ray Charles at number three.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis at number two,
mm-hmm.
and Aretha Franklin at number one.
Wow, some good company there.
Yeah, and June 2011, the city of Chicago renamed a portion of East 36th Street near Cottage Avenue as the honorary Sam Cooke Way as a way to remember the singer near a corner where he hung out and sang as a teenager.
You know, you wonder if had he lived, sing with Buddy Holly. Mm-hmm. Had those guys lived, what kind of careers they would have,
sustained it.
Yeah, because, you know, music was changing then
He was getting old. I mean, he was getting up there.
Well, he was 33, but...
That was old for that time.
But the music was changing, too.
Yeah.
I mean, you were going now and toward the mid-60s, mm-hmm. and you would go into more...
You were getting a lot more. Now, Sam Cooke was a, and it's funny, Sam Cooke had this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful voice, but he wasn't considered soulful
mm-hmm.
like the other, like Ray Charles,
right.
like Lou Rawls, like.
And
you had Sly and the Family Stone,
right.
groups like that.
And you had Ray Charles, who was able to make those transitions. So transitioned, I mean, he did country
he was blues, he was country, he was a little bit of everything.
Now, what if Sam Cooke would have been able to, do that? It was kind of like I did a podcast with Scott on Hank Williams.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the music was changing right then.
Yeah.
I mean, he died in
mm-hmm.
Late 50s. So, I mean, it was the time when music was changing. And there's questions to whether the artist was been able to change
right.
with the time.
Not many have...
But he certainly had an impressive body of work.
If you look at the people he's influenced, I mean, he's influenced people from, and being a fan, I can tell you who, one person who, if you listen to him, the voices are different, but the song stylings, the writings, the phrasing, are very, very similar, is Rod Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
Rod Stewart mm-hmm. said that Sam Cooke was his biggest influence. Steve Perry from Journey, obviously. Art Garfunkel said mm-hmm. he was his biggest influence. And a man that, now this might surprise you, his biggest influence was Sam Cooke. Two, Michael Jackson
mm-hmm.
and Tupac Shakur.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you had, you had them and you, but you make a good point. There's not many, the people I just named off here, sustainability. Now, Rod Stewart's been around forever, but he hasn't made, it's very difficult. And, I'm a huge Bruce Springsteen fan.
Right.
It's very difficult for artists to continue doing what they're doing and stay relevant, or
right.
they become like the Beach Boys and become a novelty act or a
right.
nostalgia act.
Remember when Rod Stewart had that awful disco album?
Yeah.
Do you think I'm sexy or what?
The shame of it is Rod Stewart is just a tremendous songwriter.
He's
a great songwriter. I mean, you look at some of the stuff
before
that. And
he had a tremendous career.
He came into this thing and he was a... he was a rock and roll singer,
mm-hmm.
and then he got into that disco period.
Yeah.
Then he came out after that and became a pop artist that
yeah.
had just tons and tons
yeah.
of number one hits.
Then he went on to this...
he started doing the classics.
The classic.
Yeah.
He was doing, the...
He's figured out a way
Frank
to keep
Sinatra,
the revenue streams coming.
Yeah, he was able to adjust as time went on. But whether Sam Cooke would have been able to do that, it's hard to tell. But certainly in his time, he had an impressive body of work. And like we said, like 29 top 40 hits, you know, at 33. I mean, my God, that's, you know, it was a different time. And you know, music was different then. And yeah, it played was different. You know, I mean, you had, you know, it's a lot different now with the iTunes and
well, and music. Sam Cooke was just going to be running up against the Beatles, and yeah, you're exactly right. People do not, you know, Mr. Taylor obviously is in a band, mm-hmm. and he hasn't reached that level of success yet. But one of his best friends has reached a certain level of success, mm-hmm. enough success that they do all the major festivals. They tour Europe. They tour the United States. They don't sell records, mm-hmm. you know, and they don't make money off of iTunes.
Right.
And, you know, the way you make your money is selling your T-shirts and selling concert tickets.
Yeah.
You know, that's how you have to make your money. The days of selling records are over.
It's a tough business. I heard Steven Tyler say one time that there was a brief period when you could really make a lot of money in music.
Yeah.
And it was like from 1970 to like 1979.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the time that, you know, people made, if you were a well-known act during that time, you mm-hmm. could make a ton of money. But otherwise, it's pretty tough going to make. Well, I guess they make money on iTunes, but
not, you know, not much. And to just give you something that I noticed is, you know, years ago when, as I said, I'm a huge Bruce Springsteen fan, so I bring that up quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But Born in USA, mm-hmm. I mean, it sold in the 15, 20 million album range. Mm-hmm. It was a number one album. And now he has managed, he continues to put out albums.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and he had his, one of his last albums that he put out was called Wrecking Ball. Not to be confused with that trashy, hoe bag, slimy, disgusting little Miley Cyrus tongue sticking out, skanky dog.
You know, I knew her dad, right?
Mm hmm.
I mean, I didn't. He played in the area around where I lived.
Who stole his album title after he'd had the album out for a year, and then she had an album cover. But anyway, to get to the point, Wrecking Ball, when he released it, went to number one on the charts.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how many albums he sold the first week it came out, Timmy?
How many?
55,000.
Wow.
I mean, compare that to,
yeah. You
know, nobody sell, they've actually changed the numbers of albums you have to sell to be platinum and be gold and be,
because
nobody buys
albums anymore.
Yeah, now he's done something interesting, and as a fan, you know that, you know, he's had these great albums, The River, Darkness on the Edge of Town, mm-hmm. Born to Run. What he does is remasters and re-releases them on the 30th anniversary.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, he makes, he keeps his revenue streams
but
going.
But you know, and that's an interesting point for new groups, though, for new bands and new artists trying to come up. You know, you go sometimes in some of these venues and you see, you know, 50 people. And mm-hmm. you think, you know, 70, 80 people. And you think, how in the world are they making any money off
right.
of this?
Well, they're not.
Yeah.
They're not. And I know, you know, my son being a musician, he did 9. Now, the band that he was opening for, they were guaranteed, I believe, $2,000 a night, $2,000 mm-hmm. a show. Taylor's band was guaranteed $300 a show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they were, mm-hmm. and now you're driving from one city to the next. You're staying in, although Taylor being friends with the other band, he made them pay for their hotel room every night.
Right. But you're right. I mean, you're either couch surfing, or you're sleeping in a van, or you're taking the expense of a motel. And you got gas, you got the travel expenses, and you got to divvy that $3,000 up between I don't know how many people's in this van, but it's hard to make
well,
a living.
Well, and the other thing that's changed too with the internet is that people want to always be discovering the next big thing. You know, you have, mm-hmm. and I'm just gonna give you an example. There's a group I like called the Avett Brothers,
mm-hmm.
And anybody that's listening to us, if you know the Avett Brothers, give them a shout out on the page because you need to listen to them. They're a great band. But they were kind of, and very much with the Kings of Leon, a similar thing mm-hmm. happened. They were kind of, had a kind of a cult following. Mm-hmm. And as they became more and more popular, people became a little mad at them because
the mainstream now.
They wanted to be the only people who knew right. about them, you right. know. And the internet's
it's
caused such
like,
a
it's
short
kinda
attention
like history
span.
Dreams.
Well, yeah.
I worry about us jumping the shark, Colonel.
Well, we got our haters. You know, I mean, you can read iTunes, and you know that other people from other podcasts are leaving those negative reviews.
No, that's not true.
The person who said the Colonel sound like Farkle and Leghorn, you know we got a podcast somewhere.
No, I think
he's living in his damn mama's basement. He's doing a podcast about, you know, model
trains or
some shit.
Huh? I think Scott left that one.
Well, Scott, you rat bastard.
No, Scott corrected him. He called you Longhorn Foghorn. Yeah. Leghorn Foghorn.
Leghorn Foghorn. Scott gave us 3 stars and corrected the bastard.
Yeah.
But
okay, Colonel, so I promised, you know, Rudy's legions of fans.
Rudy does have quite a following.
That I would dedicate 5 minutes of his podcast, allow you to brag on Rudy Baker. What's his Rudabaker Clarence?
Rudabaker
Clarence.
Clarence. After Clarence Clemens, the legendary saxophonist from the E Street Band.
Did you name him Rudy after the movie?
No, he was named Rudy when we got him.
Oh, okay. I thought you may have liked
Rudy was the beginning story of Rudy was Rudy and his mother were found in an abandoned house.
Okay.
6 puppies.
Okay.
And the mama. The mama did not abandon the puppies.
Well, she was a good mom.
Yeah, she was a beagle. The mother was a beagle.
Mm-hmm.
And he was taken to a rescue.
Mm-hmm.
And my boys were getting ready to go to college, and I knew that I was going to need some kind of buffer between.
You had an empty nest.
Well, I was still going to have Logan at home.
Oh, yeah, Logan was there.
And I needed,
sorry, Logan.
Well, no,
Logan.
But Logan is he's much smarter than the twins. Mm-hmm. And Logan also realized that this was going to be an every man for himself situation.
He didn't want all that attention.
He did not want the attention. And he did not want his mother's attention directed at him.
Right, well, I can understand.
So he was doing everything he could to make sure that her laser-like focus stayed on me.
Yeah.
Well, I did not want that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd also realized that, you know, I had stopped coaching baseball teams and basketball teams. And the Colonel was, as one of my boys told me, Dad, you need to find yourself something to do. You're driving people crazy. So I decided I was getting myself a dog, Timmy.
Okay.
And every good colonel need a dog, a sidekick.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
And the dog have to be, you know, coonhound some.
Yeah.
So,
in case you want to go hunting.
Yeah, in case you want to go hunting and whatnot.
Yeah.
And,
or you have raccoons coming up.
Or you have, yeah, whatever you need.
Yeah.
And so Renee, the Mrs. Colonel, she's an evil woman, evil, evil woman. And she said no. She's very anti-dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, look here, woman. We've been married 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't never put my foot down on anything. But the thing you can bet your ass on, is I'm coming home with a dog. Now, Renee, knowing this was an argument she was not going to win, and see, I needed this dog to be a buffer between me and her.
Yeah, I understand.
So, Renee, being a reasonable person, said, okay, I've gotten my way for 25 years. I'm going to give him this.
Mm-hmm.
But she also realized this was a way to make my life miserable, Timmy, because she took a steno pad
mm-hmm.
and she wrote out a list of rules.
Was it quite extensive?
It was very extensive. She made me sign it. I believe she may have had a notary come in and take care of this. And it said, Renee Walters will not walk the dog. Renee Walters will not feed the dog. Renee Walters will not buy dog food at Kroger for said dog.
She questioned your ability to be responsible?
She did. Mm-hmm. And so I filled out the application for the rescue, Timmy.
Mm-hmm.
And I got approved. And it was the proudest day of my life.
I'm going to say, how did you ever pass that background check?
I have no idea. They must have been desperate.
Yeah, they must have been desperate, and it must be real cursory.
So they told me that
didn't include Google, I'm sure.
Timmy, I could go over to China and adopt a baby easy, and you can get a dog from a rescue. I had to take pictures of my yard.
Well,
I believe I was fingerprinted. I'm
that's
not
a good
sure.
thing. That's a good thing.
So anyway, you know, it's the proudest moment day of my life. Mm-hmm. And they told us that they was, I was on adoptapet.com. That's where I found the letter. Mm-hmm. And they told us he was half beagle. They knew the mother was beagle and the father was a dachshund. Mm-hmm. So that fit into, that's the only thing I had to get Renee's permission was on the size of the dog. It had to be under 25 pounds. Mm-hmm. So that fit the criteria.
Okay.
And so they said, you're approved. Come up and look at him Saturday. And I said, okay. Now, Renee went with me. She's got a, you know, she got the mean body. You know how women got that body language and that just vibe they give off that mm-hmm. says, you know, I'm evil. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a bad person.
She's here under protest.
Here under protest, yes. Mm-hmm. And I said to the girls, I said, look here, girls. I was in a foster family, and I said, they was only 8 weeks old, 10 weeks. I said, girls, now look here. Which one of these dogs is your favorite? And the both girls said, oh, Rudy. And I said, really? Why Rudy? And they said, oh, he's by far the most playful, the most fierce, and the most cuddly. Mm-hmm. So I said, well, let me see Rudy. So the woman picks up Rudy, hands Rudy to me, and right about the time Rudy is actually going to hit my hands, mm-hmm. Mrs. Colonel snatches that dog from that woman. And it's doing that whole woman, oh, look at his little face, look at his little blah, blah, blah. And this sumbitch dog, knowing which side of the bread his butter is
right,
on.
Right, he was going to make the decision.
Drops his head right on his shoulder, starts licking her on the face.
I wonder if they trained them to do that.
Sumbitch, they have been inseparable ever since, Timmy. I don't even really have a dog.
You may have to get another one.
I know. I have to get another one. You know what my son told me? He said, if you get another one, Mom's just going to have two dogs, and you still ain't going to have none. So, Rutabaga is fierce. He's a big mama's boy. Mm-hmm. But he, and what we found out is they hooked us all up, everybody that adopted from that litter on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Rutabaga is not half beagle and half dachshund.
What is he?
Rutabaga is half German Shepherd and half beagle.
Oh, really?
The other five in the litter were half dachshund and half beagle.
Uh-oh.
Apparently, his mama was kind of a whore.
It sounds like. Maybe not a whore, but she sleeps with Nazis, apparently.
With a stray, yeah, she does sleep with Nazis. And with a stray, they just pull a train on the poor doggy.
That's awful.
The dogs line up one right after another, and if the egg don't get fertilized by the first one, it'll get fertilized by the second one.
Well.
So
that can happen in adults too, you know.
It can. Yeah, they just, this woman had a set of twins.
And then, you know, they made a big story about that. She had a set of twins and they were from mm-hmm. different parents. But, you know, I worked in child support for a while. And mm-hmm. we had a woman who had twins. Father, paternity was established for one of the babies. We ruled out like 9 guys for the second one.
No kidding. Yeah.
But, you know, and it was in the news this week, like how rare that is. Yeah. I didn't realize it was that rare.
Mm-hmm.
But it does happen. So Rudy is really, they're just his half-brothers and sisters.
They're his half-brothers and sisters. But I noticed this because we're comparing pictures, and one woman said, well, can you believe that Jed is up to 22 pounds now? I said, 22 pounds? What the hell are you talking? Rudy's up to 45 pounds. This dog ain't half dachshund. So I took him to the vet. Rudy's up to 65 pounds now. He would take on any other animal that he loves to chase deer. Mm-hmm. He never catches them, of course. Mm-hmm. He will chase a rabbit, and occasionally he'll corner it and catch it, but he mm-hmm. doesn't do anything to him. Mm-hmm. And he's probably the finest canine, really. Listeners, you can throw pictures of your dogs up on the page, but I would venture to say Rudy's the most handsome. He's a good dancer. He can sing.
He's good at math.
He's good at math, Rudy's. And surprisingly, for a dog, he's a damn good bowler, Timmy.
Is he?
He's a surprisingly good bowler.
Does he pool well? Does he shoot pool?
No, but he does play poker.
Oh, okay.
He does play poker.
Okay. Well,
so
he sounds like the perfect companion.
He is the perfect companion. And the thing, Rudy's a gentleman dog. Mm-hmm. So if you, ladies, if you come over to the Colonel house, Rudy not going to stick his nose right in your crotch.
Yeah. He'll open the door for you.
He'll open the door for you. Yeah, he'll even get you a drink, mm-hmm. put some ice cubes in there. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Now the only thing I can't break him of is licking himself.
Well, but yeah, you can't break yourself of that.
Well, you know why he does that? Because he can.
Well, of course. Who wouldn't?
Who wouldn't?
So, okay. So
that's the story of Rudy.
That's the story of Rudy.
So the great Rutabaga War can be settled. And
yes. So I hope that Rudy can listen again to our podcast. So, okay, Colonel, where can people find us?
Well, people, the best place to find us is on the iTunes.
Yeah, we're on iTunes.
Leave us a review.
Please, a positive review.
Unless you're going to call me Foghorn Leghorn, and then you can kiss my ass, just turn it to another podcast. I don't care if you like it.
I don't think that was on there. I think it was on our, I don't know where it was, but I don't think it was on iTunes.
We got the two pages on Facebook. We got the History Dweebs page, which is a much more serious page. It's This Day in History, historic events, birthdays, whatever. If you're a serious history geek, follow that one. And then we got the History Dweebs podcast page, where basically people come in and have conversations about whatever the hell they want to have.
Yeah, we're having a lot of fun with that page.
We have a lot of interaction with a lot of very, very interesting people.
Yes.
Now, most of the people,
they seem to like serial killers.
They like serial killers. They're a little bit offbeat. Some of them are just damn unhinged.
Yes.
But
all very attractive.
We do have an attractive following, Timmy.
Yeah. Yeah.
We do have an attractive following. I've noticed that. Colonel still ain't got a stalker. I had somebody volunteer, but she still ain't stalked me.
Yeah.
But that'll come, I suppose.
Let's hope. So, yeah, that's the History Dweeb Podcast Facebook group. Look us up. You send us a request, and we'll approve you. We approve anyone. We don't do background checks.
We do not.
If we did, we would have a very small group.
Yeah, we would.
But check us out on Twitter. We're at HistoryDweebs1. And as the Colonel said, you can find us on iTunes. And that's all we have for now. So we'll see you all again next time on History Dweebs.
Good day, listeners.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.